Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/style. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. With results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rating hiring site in America. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/style, as in pair style. That's ZipRecruiter.com/style, ZipRecruiter.com/style. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast. On a Wednesday, we're going to do a little preview. Big Pac-12 South matchup coming up this weekend with the undefeated Colorado Buffaloes visiting the USC Trojans in the Coliseum. And we got Adam Munster Tiger here from BuffStampede.com. He's going to talk about the Buffs. We're also going to talk about the betting lines with Rafael Esparza. We do that every week. He's with Doc Sports Service, and he's an odds maker consultant for MyBookie.ag. So we'll get him on a little bit later on the show. But right now, we wanted to welcome in Adam Munster Tiger. What's up, Adam? How you doing, man?
Hey, Ryan. I'm doing pretty well. It is a cold and chilly, gloomy day here in Boulder, but I like your energy. You're getting me revved up for this interview.
Nice. Yeah, it's like 70 here or something. I don't know. It's like shorts and t-shirts. It's probably not that way in Colorado.
You know, usually October is beautiful here. It's usually my favorite weather month. It gets, you know, kind of that chill in the air in the morning, and then it warms up to, you know, high 60s, low 70s most days. But I don't know. I guess this is what, an El Nino year where they're bracing us for a cold winter here. So It's kind of started early.
Nice. All right. Well, if you guys want to follow Adam, he's a great follow on Twitter at AdamCM777, and he's the publisher of BuffStampede.com. Been doing that since 2003. Crazy. We've been doing this a long time, Adam.
A really long time. And you know, unlike you, I've seen some really bad football, right? it's been aside from 16 and, you know, early on this year, and they did go to a bowl game back in 07. But yeah, it's been a lot of tough years on this beat here, and definitely a lot more energy, a lot more of a buzz around this program than we've, you know, again, we had it for a brief period of time there in 16, but even that year they lost at Michigan earlier in the year. So a 5-0 start is the best start they've had in two decades.
Pretty special. I love this about Mike McIntyre. So this is his sixth season, I believe. Four times Colorado's finished last in the South, and one time they've won it. So it's either like a feast or famine. I think you'd rather have that than like Utah finishing like second all the time and not ever winning it. But this is one of those years where it looks like they could win it again. They're the only undefeated team left in the conference.
So yeah, I guess I can book my travel then for the Pac-12 championship. Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying this looks like, I mean, obviously this weekend is important, but this looks like this could be one of those teams. You know, this isn't going to be a last, you know, they're not going to finish last. I can tell you that.
Well, it's interesting. Just obviously preseason publications didn't really give Colorado much of a chance. And I get it to some extent, losing Philip Lindsay, who's now with the Denver Broncos and doing good things with them. And, you know, you just kind of thought with three senior receivers, if you didn't do a whole lot of research in that group, would maybe take a step back. But there was a lot of young talent in this program. And, you know, certain guys like Laviska Shenault that should have been on the field more than he was last year. So there was kind of this quiet confidence within this group. And you're always going to have that optimistic tone during preseason camp. That happens. I mean, that even happened the year Colorado went 1-11 under John Embry. It's just the nature of it. You're, you know, hope springs eternal. But this year, there really was just kind of this feeling around the program that not only did they have this quiet confidence, but the guys genuinely liked each other, which I think is sometimes an underrated thing with a college team, especially when you're dealing with 18 to 22 year olds that can really ride momentum one way or the other. And certainly getting off to a quick start in winning at Nebraska. I know the Cornhuskers are down this year, but you're still playing in front of 90,000 people, and they battled back from adversity in that game. And it kind of gave this program a jolt, and they've been kind of riding that now. Up until last week, their opponents had a combined record of 1-16. So that certainly played into it a little bit. But I think we can both agree that Arizona State's a pretty darn solid football team.
Yeah.
If they didn't have to face the three heavyweights from the North this year, I would give them a chance to contend for the South. I don't think now with them losing at CU, having a couple conference losses, that's probably not going to happen for them. But that's a pretty good football team. And again, they had really good second half adjustments, which again, covering this program since 03, a lot of times they'd come out with a decent plan and then teams would adjust, and Colorado would never have that second adjustment. And this year they've been really good at that. DJ Elliott is in his second year as a defensive coordinator here. He took quite a bit of criticism last year, but they were going to take a big step back defensively no matter what. And certainly Jim Leavitt chased the money, but I think he was going to leave no matter what. He just kind of saw that it was going to take a couple of years to rebuild the defense after what they lost following the 2016 season in terms of talent. A bunch of guys that are in the NFL now, so they've been able to regroup there. They're more experienced defensively, and then Laviska Shenault's been a one-man show. Steven Montez is as efficient as any quarterback in the country. So it's certainly, you know, it's if you looked at things, what would be the best case scenario for this program through five games? It's been pretty much that case. They have had one injury to Juwan Winfrey, who we were debating in the preseason, Juwan Winfrey or Laviska Shenault, who's going to lead this team in receiving yards. So that's how talented he is. And he's really been the only big guy that's been banged up early on the season. So pretty much everything's gone the right way for Colorado this year. But they, you know, now this week going out to USC, this is a USC program they've never beaten. So it's a big challenge for sure.
Yeah. And the, you know, you talk about the like confidence coming into the season for the podcast of champions. I did watch everybody's spring game on the Pac-12 network. And I did come away impressed with both Colorado and Utah. Utah's got a little bit slower start, but they looked more like what I thought they would look when they played Stanford, when they get the offense going. But the weird thing was, it did seem, watching the Colorado one, it seemed like there was like secrets, like, wait till you guys see this. And obviously one of them is Laviska Shenault, who's like, you know, maybe the best player in the conference, one of the best in the country. He's just been ridiculous. If I don't know if you want to tell the story of like where he came from, how Colorado got him, and you know, he just seemed to burst on the scene as a superstar, and no one really heard of him before.
Yeah, he wasn't an under the radar guy. He went to DeSoto High School, which is one of the powerhouses not only in Texas but nationally. It's a program that produces a lot of talent, and he had an offer from Alabama. So this was not a kid that, you know, was not recruited by other schools. Darren Cheverini, who's their offensive coordinator now, their play caller, came to Boulder right before that 16 season and just became a really dynamic recruiter from day one. He went to CU. He was a receiver for the Buffs and went on to play in the NFL. And he's a really charismatic. He's got a lot of swag to him for a guy that's a little bit older. You know, kids can really relate to him. And he made a connection with Laviska Shenault's family. And also Katie Nixon, who is their second leading receiver, was also a four-star guy coming out of DeSoto, that same class. And Laviska committed first between those two. And he said a few times that he looked at it as a challenge to go somewhere and not only create a name for himself in college, but help lift up a program versus going to an Alabama and just kind of being, you know, the next Julio Jones type guy. He wanted to be kind of create a legacy somewhere else, you know, at a school that wasn't known to be a football powerhouse. He's a really quiet kid, not a flashy guy at all. And so certainly has played out the way that he hoped it would, in terms of, you know, if it's not for Laviska Shenault, this team is not 5-0 right now. And they're not probably as much in the conversation for the South as they are right now without him. So he's been the catalyst for this program. And he's a guy that actually, as a wide receiver, lifts with the offensive lineman. And the reason he does that is because he lifts so much more than the other receivers. It takes too much time for them to take off all those, put on all those plates and take them off when he goes to lift. So he's his lower body is built, you know, like an NFL tight end bordering on, you know, a college offensive lineman. And the knock on him actually coming out of high school, strangely, was that he didn't have great top end speed. It was kind of a rumor that he was more like a 4.6 guy. But when other teams try to tackle him and other guys try to get a good angle on him, he seems to find a way just to outrun them. So he's really kind of the perfect example when you talk about football speed. He seems to get faster when the pads go on, and his versatility is probably his number one attribute, just because being so talented, they put him out wide every time. Other teams are going to bracket him. It's going to be harder for him to get the ball. Colorado moves him everywhere. He's lined up in the Wildcat formation. He'll line up at running back. He'll line up at tight end. He'll line up in the slot. He'll line up outside. He'll do some jet sweeps. He pretty much does it all for this offense. And even when he's not making plays, it's really opened things up for other guys. Trayvon McMillan, the graduate transfer running back from Virginia Tech, has rushed for over 100 yards in 4 or 5 games. And he's a talented back on his own. He would have good stats without LaVisca in the offense. But just the way that LaVisca and other teams are focusing on number two all the time, it's opened things up in the ground game as well.
Yeah, he was the next guy I was going to talk about, because we talked about him during the offseason, transferring in from Virginia Tech. And he had over 2,100 yards and 16 touchdowns there. But I think you told me he was a powerful runner, yards after contact, and that's exactly what I see when I'm watching him run. It's really hard to bring him down with the first time you touch him, and just seems to be able to bowl people over afterwards. And just to me, it's like a great compliment. Two guys that weren't around really last year to contribute, Chenault and McMillan, to go along with Steven Montez, who to me looks more like he did when he was like coming in for Sefolu'u when he was hurt, instead of like what he looked like last year. It's like a three-headed monster on offense, and it just seems to, even though two of the pieces are essentially new, it seems like it's clicking right away.
Yeah, and you know, Steven Montez, he did get some of that action in 16 when Sefolu'u was getting banged up, but even Steven didn't really play well that year when he was thrust into games. He did have that great game against Oregon and had a couple other moments, but, you know, he was still pretty rough around the edges. And so 17 was really his first full season as a starter. And, you know, he wasn't a team captain. They named 17 captains this past off season. And what we just kept hearing is that Steven Montez liked being a college student. He's in a fraternity and, was not to say lazy and wasn't a good teammate. He just was not 100% dedicating himself to being a great quarterback. He always had those physical tools. I remember seeing him at a camp when he was in high school, and he had just great arm strength as a string bean junior in high school, and good athleticism there too. He just kind of needed to harness all that and finally gain some maturity, and it really helped Colorado that Brian Lindgren left. Not that he was a bad quarterbacks coach, but he was a really cerebral type guy, and he's now Oregon State's offensive coordinator. They promoted Darren Cheverini to be the play caller, and that's worked out well. And they brought in Kurt Roper as a new quarterbacks coach. This is a guy that's been around coaching quarterbacks for a long time. He actually coached Eli Manning when he was at Ole Miss, and he's been an offensive coordinator at a bunch of places, Duke, South Carolina. And he came into Boulder and is not the play caller, so he could just focus his energy on Steven Montez and those other quarterbacks. And he sat down with Steven and said, look, you know, do you really want to be a great quarterback? Because if you do, you got to listen to me, and you got to actually spend a lot more time in the film room. And it just kind of clicked for Montez. And he was up late at night watching film on his tablet, and he'd be calling Kurt Roper for advice on certain coverages. And so I don't know if it was simply Kurt Roper getting in his ear or what it was, but Montez just seemed really mature. And even though he wasn't one of the 17 captains, he's evolved into maybe this program's best leader in the last 5 weeks and has really taken ownership of this program. It certainly helps when you have success and other guys are willing to listen to you, because you're one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the country. He brought his entire offensive line, insisted that all 7 of the offensive linemen that played in the Arizona State game joined him in the post-game press conference, another show of leadership. So it's been pretty impressive just to kind of watch his evolution. The offense definitely helps him. They're it helps to have a Laviska Shenault in the ground game that's working. and some of these shorter routes are helping his completion percentage. But he's played pretty close to perfect this season. He's had a couple throws maybe he'd want back. But even if you look last week, I think he had seven or eight incompletions. And at least five of those were just really smart throwaway plays. So it's really come together for him. From he always had the physical tools, and now the mental is catching up, and he can read defenses better, dissect them after putting in that film study. So he's going to get tested. I'm sure there's going to be times this year where he might revert back to a little bit more, being a little bit more inconsistent when he faces some of the top defenses in the conference. But so far through five games, he's been playing at an all-conference level. I mean, Herbert from Oregon is the only guy I can think of that's been more efficient than him so far this year.
Yeah. So really, really love the offense, what I've seen so far. If you remember, you know, 2016, the defensive side, I believe it was more of a senior-laden defense. And, you know, a lot of those guys end up moving on, and that, you know, that hurt the defense last year. But a couple of linebackers that both, you know, bring back a ton of tackles. What have you seen from this Colorado defense so far?
Well, when you were talking about on a couple of guys that emerged that weren't in the program last year, a guy defensively, Nate Lammon, he did play a little bit, I guess I should say, as a true freshman, but only, I think it was 70 snaps total on the whole season. He's the guy that's emerged, been playing at an all-conference level. He was the defensive player of the week one, and has really followed that up. He was disqualified from the Arizona State game last Saturday in the first half for a kind of a questionable targeting call, but he's been just a stud defensively, one of the hardest hitters on the team, and it always seems to be in the right places, kind of has the football instincts. And Rick Gamboa is the other inside linebacker, and he's a fifth-year senior that's played a ton of football, team captain. He doesn't have the greatest athleticism, though. He's always just been more of the kind of that football IQ that knows how to be in the right spot. So sometimes when he can't get to the play, Nate Lammon kind of makes up for that. So they've been a really good duo there. Defensive line was the reason, in my opinion, this Colorado team didn't go to a bowl game in 2017. They fell just one win short of that. They were 5-7, and it was a D-line that was consistently getting pushed off the line 3 yards and made it really tough for those linebackers. They run a three down lineman scheme, so if you're not taking up, if you're not space heaters down there up front with those three defensive linemen, if you're not taking up blockers, it's not going to make your linebackers look very good. And that was a case that Colorado's linebackers wore as last season went on. They brought in Mustafa Johnson from the JUCO ranks, and he's honestly been the most disruptive defensive lineman at least through five games this year since I've been covering this program. He just is. It's not, again, when you run a three down lineman scheme, those guys are mostly taking on blockers, not making a ton of tackles themselves. They're letting the guys behind them clean up. But Mustafa has been able to take on those blockers, shed them, and make plays in the backfield. He had a huge sack when Arizona State was close to tying the game last week. It was second and at the two-yard line. Colorado was up by 7 points, and Mustafa Johnson gets in the backfield, sacks Wilkins. They hold on third down, and all of a sudden kind of the momentum of the game changed. So he's been a huge addition for them. Javier Edwards, their nose tackle, again, going back, if you have a three-down line scheme, if that nose tackle is not taking up both A-gaps, it makes it, again, really tough on the guys behind him. And Edwards struggled last year. He came in from the JUCO ranks weighing 395 pounds. And he was explosive for a play or two, but he would just wear down. He didn't have the conditioning behind him. He's down to about 325 now, so that's a lot of weight that he's lost in the last year and a half since he's been in Boulder. And he's been much more conditioned and playing a lot more snaps and has been really good. We do a top 10 performers list after each game, and he's been on that list even though he hasn't put up gaudy stats. He's just not going to in that nose tackle role. But he's been on that list 3 of 5 games this year. That's how well he's played. The secondary, I didn't look this week. Going into the Arizona State game, they ranked second in pass defense efficiency. I was telling Chris Carbon, our Arizona State publisher, that I think that group's overrated. I don't think they're quite as good as that stat would suggest. N'Keal Harry did expose some stuff in the first half, but then when Harry got banged up in the second half, they were able to lock down Arizona State's receivers a little bit better. Still, I think that's a group with good quarterback play that can be exploited a little bit. It's not that it's not a it's a bad unit. It's just if you're looking at the defense as a whole, that's probably the area that's most likely to get exploited against some of these top-tier teams. And obviously, going against USC and Washington this week. I think that group's going to be tested quite a bit here the next couple weeks.
What's the deal with Drew Lewis? He had a whole bunch of tackles last year, right? Like over 100 tackles or something?
Yeah, he led the team in 119 tackles. And actually, it was Nate Lamon, who I talked about being their best defensive player now as a true sophomore, really just emerging at the beginning of the camp. And they said, you know what, Drew, you're a senior. We're asking you to make a selfless move here. Can you move to outside linebacker? He had done that a little bit earlier. He signed with Washington out of high school as more of an outside linebacker recruit. So he was willing to move to outside backer to allow Nate Lamon to get on the field more, because they weren't going to take Rick Gamboa off the field given all his experience. And, yeah, it took a little time to adjust to moving to outside backer. He hadn't played that since his redshirt year at Washington. And then it was in week four against UCLA, he had two sacks and seemed to kind of rev him up. And last week I mentioned that Nate Lamon was disqualified. So it was nice for Colorado. Their best defensive player gets disqualified. You can move Drew Lewis back to Jack linebacker, and he did well. He led the team in tackles with 10 in that Arizona State game. So he's starting to get more comfortable. He'll be back at outside backer this week against USC. So they've got two seniors at linebacker, and then their best player, Lamon, is a sophomore at backer. So that's really where the talent shines on defense for Colorado.
Then one last thing, just on the specialist. I know Alex Kinney, he had the best punting average in the country like the last five games last season. And there's like a 31-year-old kicker too on the team. What's the specialist and stuff been like? Yeah.
So yeah, Alex Kinney actually broke his collarbone week two against Nebraska. He's getting close to being back, but he's going to be out again this week. And they have a former walk-on, Davis Price, that's handling punting duties. He's trying. It's not the job that he was expected to have this year. You don't often see a punter get injured. So he struggled a little bit. He shanked one last week, and actually Arizona State had an offsides penalty that kind of gave him another chance, and he hit that 145 yards. But he's averaging less than 40 yards per punt. So that could potentially be an issue on Saturday. James Stefano, you mentioned being 31 years old. Kind of an interesting story there. He was a professional soccer player. He's from Australia. Played professional soccer, was done with that, and he was starting to go into the business world, and he had a buddy. There's that Pro Kick Academy produces a lot of punters, more so than kickers. You see a lot of those guys that actually go to Utah and have had a lot of success. He was just at a park with a buddy that was working at Pro Kick Australia, and his buddy saw how well he was kicking the ball and said, you know, you might want to give this a try. So he went to Pro Kick, and they coached him up a little bit. He got the opportunity to come over to Colorado last year as a 30-year-old true freshman. And he is the first guy to make fun of his age. And so he's had a good attitude about that. And he's even joked that he's kind of immature, so he fits in well with these college kids. It's kind of a cool story. He has dealt with a little bit of a groin issue. Super consistent until some of the critical moments this year. He missed two field goals late in the game at Nebraska. He missed his only field goal attempt against Arizona State, so that's a little bit of an issue. Again, he had been a really solid kicker, but this groin issue, he's not been kicking at 100%. So special teams going into the season was maybe the area you felt best about this Colorado team, and all of a sudden with the injury to Kinney and Stefano's issues here the last few weeks, that's maybe one of the bigger concerns all of a sudden.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Well, that'll be something to watch for sure. Don't know. USC's favored by a touchdown on this one. Seems a little high for me. The Trojans aren't very good at covering the spread. They're 1-4 this season. The only spread they covered is because of a missed extra point against Arizona. I don't know. What do you kind of expect from this one?
I expect a pretty competitive game. You know, when Colorado went out there a couple of years ago with that talented 16 squad, they battled. It was a good game. I think they lost that game by a field goal. Colorado's never beaten USC. They're 0-12 against them. At the press luncheon, you know, the players were asked about that, and they said, you know, we're trying to take that one game at a time mentality, and it just so happens this is the game where we're going up against a team we've never beaten. So of course now it's extra motivation. It's certainly something those guys are thinking about. I think 7 is probably pretty high too, but I don't know. I'm leaning towards. I've predicted that USC wins a one-point game, I don't know, somewhere around 31-30. The only thing that would surprise me is if either team ran away from the other team. I would expect to have a back-and-forth type game.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I think it'll be close. And it might come down to some weird special teams plays or something, or turnovers. USC's not been very good at forcing them. If they end up turning the ball over a bunch, you could see them easily losing. If, you know, whoever turns the ball over most, that might be their downfall. But it seems pretty even, you know. But that's why we love college football. We want to watch this one. So can Colorado stay undefeated?
Yeah.
We'll see. It's this is a big one for the South. And, you know, Colorado's got at USC, at Washington, so that's not easy. And then USC has three in the month of October, Colorado, Arizona State, both at home and at Utah. So I think we'll know a lot about this Pac-12 South race after the month of October.
I mean, I don't think there's any question whoever wins between Colorado and USC on Saturday, it has to be the front runner, right? I mean, yeah. Because you look at Utah and Arizona State both having to play all three heavyweights from the North. I'm sure, you know, Khalil Tate might go off a couple times and Arizona might win a couple games they're not supposed to, but I don't really see them contending. I really feel like whoever wins on Saturday is going to have to feel really, really good about their chances of winning the division.
I would think so. The one you got can't count is you can't count out Utah. They don't play three powers from the – they play four. They play Stanford. They've already played Washington and Washington State. Then they played Stanford, and they still have to play Oregon later in the season. So I'm kind of regretting – I picked them to win the South. I'm kind of regretting that at this point, just seeing the schedule. But they could do it – if they run the table, they could do it with a, you know, 7-2 record. But it's not going to be easy to run the table. I think that everyone in the South, I think, yeah, could – you could win or lose, but – playing, you know, Oregon at home is going to be tough. But if they can split four, you know, 2-2 with the two Washington schools, Stanford and Oregon, that's a pretty brutal stretch. That would be pretty impressive for Kyle Whittingham's crew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of there's a lot of parity in the South this year. I think you're going to just see these teams kind of beat up on each other throughout the season, which, again, it keeps the Pac-12 out of kind of the national spotlight, but at least it makes for entertaining football games.
Yeah. Well, this should be a really fun one. Can't wait to get out there to the Coliseum and check it out. Adam Munster Tiger, BuffStampede.com. Again, thanks so much for coming on and giving us a little preview.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
All right. That's Adam Munster Tiger. Make sure you check him out. We'll be back in a couple seconds here. We'll talk about the betting lines. Stay tuned for that. You know, ever since I started the Peristyle podcast, people have been asking me for betting advice. Are the Trojans going to cover the spread? Truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they're your best bet this season. They've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. You can lay down some cash and win big today. That's why I'm urging you to go make your way to MyBookie. You win and they pay. They have in-game, live betting, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. And all you fantasy gurus out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. So if you join now, MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code PERISTYLE to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code Peristyle when creating an account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, as promised, we got Rafael Esparza on the line. You can follow him on Twitter at VSI Doc Sports. He's with Doc Sports Service, and he's an odds maker consultant for mybookie.ag. Rafael, thanks for coming on again. How are you?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Can't complain. It's a college football weekend. Got a little time off. I get to watch a lot of the other games last weekend, since USC had a bye, I didn't have to go travel, cover anything. But this weekend, a big one in the Coliseum with undefeated Colorado coming to town.
Yeah, I mean, big game, big win for them last weekend. If you like close, hard-fought football in any conference, Colorado, Arizona State last week, it was good because it was going back and forth, a tie game. Arizona would take the lead. Colorado tied up. They'll take the lead. Arizona State ties it up. It was just a back and forth. Colorado gets the 7-point victory. And like I said, they're a perfect 5-0. And that was a big win for them because they have their meat of their schedule coming up after this game. They go to Washington right after this game. So if you're Colorado, if there's a road victory that I don't want to say must have, it could be this one, because you don't want to go into Washington losing a game against USC, because you might have back-to-back loss. You could be 5-0 and then going to an easy victory in 2 weeks against Oregon State, losing back-to-back games. So I'm really excited for this game at the Coliseum. USC laying 7 at home, totals 57 against an undefeated Colorado. Should be a fun, exciting one. So glad it's a 10:30 one, so I don't have to worry about other games interfering, so I can just sit back and watch this one.
Yeah, it'll be a late one at the Coliseum. I'll be out there checking it out. It's been a while since we've been back in the Coliseum. If I'm not mistaken, so USC overall, you said that the line is 7. Seemed high to me when I first came out. USC is 1-4 this season against the spread. We've talked about that before. And they were a missed extra point away, just a missed extra point from being 0-5. I believe Colorado is 5-0 against the spread. Just looking at the games, I believe they're 5-0. Is there a game they did not cover this year? Do you know?
I did not cover the game against New Hampshire. They were minus 37.5, and they only, I shouldn't say only won. They won 45-14.
Okay.
They didn't cover. But I know the number seems tad high, and I had Colorado last week against Arizona getting a big victory. But if you look at Colorado, they played 3 straight home games, and they barely beat Nebraska, which everyone in the Big Ten has been beating up Nebraska. Yeah. This game, I think this game we're really, really going to see, A, that extra week off prepare USC, and B, did that 24-20 road victory at Arizona inspire them to have great practices bye week and be prepared for, I want to say, the second half of the season. Because, like I said, after this bye week, they not only did they get Colorado at home, but they go to Utah next week, and that's a tough place to beat the Utes at home. And then they go to Arizona State comes in the Coliseum, so this game right here is going to see if USC is going to go to a nice bowl game, or is USC just going to hang around and say, oh, well, let's just wait for next year and maybe get to a better bowl game.
Yeah, it's a tough stretch in October. At least it's an important one with you. What you're talking about, Colorado is undefeated. Arizona State, who, you know, Colorado just beat by 7, they covered that spread too. I think Arizona State's a really good team, but they're a good team. They just can play with everybody that they're, you know, that they're playing with. It's kind of like a Herm Edwards, like NFL, like you're trying to go 9-7 and make the playoffs. And that's not really how it works in college. But I think that's they still got talent. N'Keal Harry's great. Manny Wilkins. And then, of course, like you said, going to Utah. So it's going to be a really interesting stretch for the Pac-12. It's almost like you need Colorado to stay undefeated, but to expect Colorado to win on the road at USC and Washington back to back, probably not likely. This could be the next 2 weeks we could see Colorado come back to earth or become a big national story.
Yeah, I mean, and JT Daniels, who says he was glad, he was sad that they had a bye week because they had back-to-back wins, beating Washington by 3, Arizona on a road by 4. But he didn't throw any interceptions in those back-to-back wins. And he said he was finally in the group. He thought the team was pulling together after that loss against Texas. So, like I said, this coming up a bye week, I think it's going to be a plus. You don't want to go into a bye week losing back-to-back games. You want to go into a bye week with winning, because then practice is a lot fun, and you get you're in a better mood to prepare for your next game of the week off and get to cure some wounds if you have any bumps or bruises. But yeah, I think look for JT Daniels. I think he's going to have another big game like he did at home against Washington State. I'm really excited to watch this game, and I think we're gonna maybe see the USC team we thought we were gonna see when the season started.
So you're thinking that the Trojans will cover the spread then?
I'm almost pulling out, because I'm not 110% sold on Colorado. They had 3 easy road games. I didn't like the way they played Nebraska. I think we'll finally see what Nebraska really is. Now this is the true conference road game that the Buffs have to come undefeated. I think they taste their first out this week, and I'm thinking USC wins and covers.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I could see, like, I forget who I was talking to, but it does get the feeling that this could be the game off the bye week that USC plays up to their potential, all the talent that they got on the team. You could kind of see that happening, but we haven't really seen it this year. So you're kind of, you know, relying on this team to do something that we really haven't seen playing anywhere close to their potential. Maybe, you know, maybe a little bit against Washington State, but certainly, you know, 18 penalties, all the mistakes, turnovers and everything against Arizona. The last time we saw him, we didn't see him there, but I kind of feel like I'm still going to, I think I'm going to take Colorado and the points, but I feel like this could be the game that USC just breaks out and you're like, yeah, that's the team we expected. It would be bad news for Colorado because everyone will just say, well, okay, that were a paper tiger. They weren't for real, but it might just be USC comes out and plays their best game of the season. And I could see that happening.
Yeah. So next week when we're talking, one of us would be a winner and one of us would be a loser since you're taking Colorado.
I've been pretty good with picking USC, but against USC, we'll see if they could change it up this time. All right, Rafael Esparza, man, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your insights. What about the over-under real quick before we let you go? Any thoughts on that?
I like the way USC played defense against Arizona. I think their defense is going to start turning around because they gave up back-to-back 30-plus points, 36 to Washington, 37 to Texas. I like defense on this one, so I'm leaning towards the under on this game. The total's 57. I thought it would be around 58, 57. I think there's still value on the under at 57.
All right. Rafael Esparza, follow him on Twitter, VSI Doc Sports. Thanks again, man, for coming on. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the game.
All right. You too. All right. Before we take off, there are a few extra questions that were sent in this week. I wanted to do my best to answer them. 1977 Trojan wrote in. He said, I liked your article showing which college football teams have the highest number of 4- and 5-star players on their roster. It's painfully obvious that the Trojans are not playing up to their abilities relative to teams like Alabama, Ohio State, or Georgia. The real problem is that perhaps the USC coaches are coaching up to their abilities. If you don't know how or incapable of coaching really talented players, then the end result is what we have seen this season. Physically underwhelming play at the line of scrimmage, lack of discipline with penalties, poor play calling. The team has been unprepared to play with intensity for some time now. It looks like more of the same every week. Could things change, perhaps? Not holding my breath. Thanks, 1977 Trojan. So basically the story I wrote, if you haven't seen it up on the site on uscfootball.com, I was using the, so 24/7 Sports puts out a talent composite index, basically, that will show the roster for each program and give it a rating similar to how they rate and they give a number to everyone's recruiting class. Now, this is not just adding up the recruiting classes. This is actually who is on the roster. So USC would actually be probably ranked a little higher than where they were, but they've lost some key people or highly ranked people. So they use the recruiting rankings from the 24/7 composite and you bring those in. And so, you know, USC has 8 5-stars currently on the roster, former 5-stars, but they've lost guys like Joseph Lewis, who was a 5-star, Jack Jones, who was a 5-star. So those guys are not counted on their roster for the talent. And you look at the when I put it together and looked at the top 25 on the talent composite, USC was the highest ranked team that was not ranked in the AP poll. It was the only top 25 team that was either not ranked in the AP poll or didn't have a head coaching change. So like Florida State, for example, was number 5. So they've had some really good recruiting classes, obviously. They are not ranked, but they switched their head coach. So that, I mean, that's, I'm not saying that's understandable, but that's something that's different. USC is the only program that's had like the same head coach and, isn't ranked in the AP poll. So that's what I was kind of looking at. And then some people say, well, that doesn't matter. There, you know, I've got a lot of people tell me there's not a lot of talent on the team, which I think is complete bunk there. I think there is a lot of talent on the team. And I guess to show it, do the recruiting rankings and who's left on the roster, I mean, it doesn't tell the whole story, but I think it tells a lot of the story. And if you look at the top 3 teams in 24/7's talent index, talent composite, who are they? They're Ohio State, Georgia, and Alabama. Those also are the top 3 teams ranked in the AP poll. So there's a correlation there at the very top. The anomaly is that USC is number 4, and they're nowhere near the top 4, you know, 3 or 4 in the AP poll. So I think it's a pretty good indication of you've brought in the programs that are up there in the top 10 of the composite, you know, talent composite. You've brought in a ton of talent. I don't think it's a question that USC's brought in a ton of talent. And you see it on the roster. It's there. So it's just, what is USC doing with it? So thanks for that question. Don said, we have a couple questions from Don. To your knowledge, has Helton ever helped or fought for a player who has experienced possible student behavior issues such as the Bolden situation? Does Helton fight for his players, or is he a coach that's afraid to stick up for his players? Don't you think he should be more of an advocate for his players? That's really complicated. So I don't think he's going to I don't even want to say stick his neck out, but he's someone that once it becomes a university matter, he's letting it become a university matter. And I've said this before. So if there was some sort of injustice and they felt behind the scenes, we don't know. I'm not really sure. Like if he felt that Bubba Bolden was unjustly suspended for 28 weeks, then it's a question of, would he want to do something and can he do anything? And I think there's all these privacy laws and stuff that go on with this kind of stuff where I don't think there's a lot he could do. Now, that is to say, if this was switched, it's not just him too. I think it's more of the administration and would they be playing ball with him? If you're talking about a place like Alabama where Nick Saban has all this power, I'm sure the administration, I'm sure everything around it, there would be a little bit different approach. Because you have this powerful figure in Nick Saban, and Clay Helton just isn't that. And when you hire someone that, you know, he's a guy that's happy to be there, and anyone would be. That's a great job. You take your hat off to him, and hey, this is great. But he's not someone that's going to be causing waves. And if he felt really strongly that Bubba Bolden was railroaded or whatever it was, that was, you know, in an injustice, I'm just not sure he's, at this point in his career, he's ready to come out and say, hey, this is wrong. This has got to change. Stand up to whoever he needs to stand up to. I'm not sure he would do that. And I'm not saying he should. But I think if you're Nick Saban or Urban Meyer, someone that's been doing this a long time and you have a lot of clout, I think you could. I think something like that could happen and would happen. And I just don't think it's the case here. I'm not putting that on Clay Helton. I mean, that's the kind of path you went down. You didn't want someone that was going to wield all kinds of power. You promoted from within. And if Pete Carroll was around, if this was during the Pete Carroll years, I think he would probably try to do more. Now, maybe he could do nothing. It's different now. There's all kinds of there's whole different departments that deal with this kind of stuff. I don't know. And, it's hard for us to say. Dan Weber had some really interesting things to say about this. You can listen to the podcast we put up or also check out Instant Analysis. He tried to talk to Clay Helton about it and Clay wasn't going to say anything he made a statement and that was it. Just wished Bubba Bolden well and moved on. So, So that's kind of where we are on that. So Don, thank you for that. We had one last one. This is for hello to Keely. Hello, Keely and gentlemen. Could the games played in the evening make a difference on how they play? I agree on the full-blown practices too. Fight on from Kay. Games being played in the evening. I think if you're practicing in the morning, I think the evening games could have some sort of effect. USC typically practices in the afternoon. I don't think there's a huge difference between you practice at 4 and a kickoff at 7:30. Anything like that. I do think traveling east can be, it hurts players, hurts teams. We've seen that in the NFL. I don't think it's really anything impactful as far as USC goes because they don't practice in the morning. And I know like Chip Kelly was doing that. And there were some studies that came out about that where like, hey, you're like geared up to play in the mornings and then you don't play, completely different clock. So I'm no expert on how all that stuff works, but it does seem like, there's something to that where, if you're practicing early and you're playing late, it might be your body clock might be very different. So we'll see, but I don't think it's a real big issue with USC because of, practicing in the afternoons and stuff. All right. Well, that's our preview show. Got a few of the questions in. We should have another, I know they did one already, Family Feud podcast. And we'll have our normal Thursday live broadcast as well. So that should be fun. Make sure you check all that stuff out. And everything else is up at uscfootball.com. But we really appreciate you listening to the Peristyle podcast. Football's back this weekend in the Coliseum. Try to get there early. Remember, all the parking, all that kind of stuff is still, still construction zone, still stuff going on there. And the Pac-12 Network will be broadcasting live, 3 p.m. Pacific, McCarthy Quad, if you want to go check that out. They'll be there. I'll probably be around there hanging out and check it out before the game. So thanks so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.